Matthew 18:15-20. If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly, I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly, I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm there among them. Holy wisdom, holy word.
Thanks be to God. Well, I'm still a bit new to Keystone, so I thought I'd start our conversation today with a couple of get to know you questions. You can just raise your hands as you are willing. Who likes to read nonfiction, history books, memoirs, things like this? Anybody? A couple people? Okay. What about novels? Fiction books, yeah, great. Does anybody like science fiction? No, not many science fiction, maybe. Who likes light reading? Fun magazines, home and garden blogs, things like that. Oh, Joe, okay, great. And who really focuses in on news, newspapers, news magazines, news online? A couple of us, okay. All right. And who likes a great instruction manual? A handbook? Anyone? No. All right. I don't know many people who would choose to read instructions start to finish and really enjoy it and take it all in. My college students never seem to read the whole syllabus and really take it to heart. But when we want some people to get something right, we do hope they read the instructions carefully. I'm not one of those types, though. I'm definitely the type who confidently takes everything out of the box and tries to put the thing together without even paying close attention to the instructions. And when I hear this text, it feels a lot like an instruction manual, and I bristle a bit at these instructions. It seems like a community handbook, right? Go to the person, talk it out. They won't listen. Bring a witness. If they still don't listen, treat them as a Gentile or a tax collector. The last part we'll come back to, but should we shun them or should we invite them over for dinner? Jesus seemed to have chosen the latter, so it seems a little off in these set of instructions, but we'll come back to that. In a previous job, I did community education for adults about end-of-life issues. And so, in all my work with creating curriculum and creating programming, I inherently knew that adults don't appreciate lectures with lots of do this and do that. But I was trying to help some other people become better presenters and better community educators. So, we had a doctor who was always filling all the slides with lots and lots of information. And I was trying to help him understand that adults really appreciate conversation and they want to be assumed to already have knowledge, right? So I did find some research that proved my point. In adult education, we need to assume that our audience already knows things. They know a lot, and we want to make connections with their life experiences. Good adult learning focuses on giving adults an understanding of why they are doing something rather than just providing a list of instructions. So, as you can tell, I'm initially a bit annoyed with this prescriptive process outlined here in our gospel text today. Maybe some of us have had, the kind of one-on-one conflicts with others in a small community where this kind of process worked well for them. Maybe not. I also think about how, so far, I've not experienced a lot of one-to-one conflict in a church group myself, but some people actually have. And this text has been used in some really abusive ways, actually, suggesting that you really need to start with the first step and take this up one-to-one with someone. When someone's been harmed, this could not only be frightening, but really problematic. Some abusers have really misused this text when their wrongs were brought to the leadership and said, if you haven't confronted the person one-to-one, then you can't go around this first step and make the second step by bringing this to a leadership group or a group of people. Well, as we know, if somebody's been abused, this is really a problematic request of somebody. So I find this text discomforting in a lot of different ways. Later on, it says, if two or three of you are in agreement, great. This has also been used to support abusive practices where small groups of people excommunicate someone from their community if they don't like them, right? So it's a challenging text for me. And even if we have a good, strong community, as I think we do at Keystone, but a good community of equal power and strong relationships, and someone does harm one another, do we imagine that talking it out will always solve all our problems? It seems a little bit simplistic and maybe only helpful in relatively low stakes situations. So are there other ways to hear the text today that might add meaning to this instruction bit for us? Well, my son, Sam, who's 7, is really into what if statements and questions these days. They range from good, curious wonderings to ridiculous tangents with no reality left in them. Yesterday's was, what if the car could drive itself like a robot? We just tell it the address and it will drive us there. What if you could tell it to take us to the other side of the earth and it could take us to the exact coordinates on the other side of the earth? What if it could fly at the speed of light? So maybe you know how these kinds of what ifs just keep running with kids this age. But sometimes a what if can really help us be curious and ask new questions about something that we're facing. So what if my initial reading is not the only way to hear this text? One of the persons that I consulted and listened to for this as I was preparing had some really good what if questions that started me on kind of a new trajectory. Creation Justice Ministry Director Karen Bigelow, she asked a good what if question about how creation might be calling to us in this text. So what if we think about the different roles in this instructional process? What if we are being called out? Or what if we are the witnesses? I, at least, find it easy to read myself into texts as the one who's doing the right thing. So my initial read is, I haven't been directly involved in one-to-one conflict in church community, but if I was, I'd likely be the good one who was needing to call somebody else out, right? I'm not sure if I'm the only one who reads myself into that role here, but what if instead I'm being called out? Who have I wronged in God's larger community? Maybe more appropriately, what systems am I part of that have wronged others in the world community? Lots and lots and lots, I think. One of the stories that came to mind, some of you might actually know this story better than me, but I learned it quite recently and was a little surprised about it. But the Black Manifesto was presented to the people of Riverside Church in New York City on May 4th in 1969 by James Forman. He was the former chair of SNCC, and he was speaking on behalf of the Black Economic Forum. He went right into the pulpit as the church service was beginning, and he started reading this manifesto calling for Christian white churches and Jewish synagogues to pay $500 million in reparations to African Americans. The manifesto was shared with many churches, many people, but as you may know, there was no large movement or response to definitely fulfill this request for $500 million in reparations. What was frustrating to me was that the story hadn't been part of my education. I hadn't heard this in any of my learnings in seminary, actually. I learned it later in a book, Jennifer Harvey's book, Dear White Christians. Frustratingly, but naturally, the churches responded as white institutions tend to do. Initially, they actually directly ignored and rejected what Forman was saying. They walked right out of the congregation while he was still reading the manifesto. Then there was some silence. There was police involvement preventing him and others from coming into the church. Later on, the pastor actually did give a sermon that said we should make reparations, but definitely not begin a revolution. So it was kind of a moderated response to that request. And then churches, as they do, formed committees and study groups, and they did do some fundraising for some specific projects, but they didn't actually meet the calls of the manifesto, which explicitly asked for the money to be handed over to Black leadership so that they could decide how and when to use it, what projects they wanted to spend it on. As a white person with education and class privilege, a straight, cisgendered person, I have lots of ways and lots of places that I am part of systems of oppression. As a member of a largely white denomination in the mainline American Christianity, I am part of that group that was called out. And there were lots of witnesses. And I don't believe that we as white churches really listened to what was being asked. We certainly haven't reached any level of true repair and reconciliation in the ways the manifesto was calling for. This is, of course, part of a larger pattern. Our formation in white supremacy culture, we as white folks tend to seek safe responses, usually with delays, slow and careful study, committees, rather than the dramatic and incredible actions in the stories that Jesus inspired us with. So I believe that many of us are being called out over and over again, with lots of witnesses present in the form of protests, calls to change our systems of racial injustice in housing and economics and education and policing and prisons, so many different ways. We also can see ourselves as part of humanity, especially the privileged American folks who use cars and fly airplanes, being called out by all of creation in this climate crisis. At this point, creation is quite literally screaming at us to pay attention, with heat waves, wildfire smoke, storms worsening each year. As a human culture, I'm not sure that we are truly listening. I know many of us are trying our best, and we are doing some truly good things. We know we are part of systems that haven't truly changed in large enough ways to make the difference. So, another what if. What if we are the witnesses in this process? We, those of us who do see and understand some aspects of these systematic injustices, we know about the realities of climate change and we're trying to take action. We know about racial oppression. We are moved to figure out ways to make change. So what are witnesses called to do? We advocate, we seek policy change, we seek to activate other folks of goodwill. We are just a small church, a small community. We can try our best, but we are only part of larger systems. So I invite us to keep thinking about what is our role as witnesses? How do we activate others? How do we further the call? How do we amplify the messages that we hear and understand? My other conclusion is another what if. What if we focus on the listening asked in the process and outlined in the instructions? If someone sins against you, go to them, and if they listen to you, you have regained them. If they don't listen to you, take some witnesses. If they still don't listen to you, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Who has been trying to get our attention, and how can we witness? What does it mean to really listen, to understand in the ongoing realities of oppression and struggle? I know that in so many ways, the people of Keystone are truly doing this, really listening to neighbors, community members. Caring, compassionate response, activism, and policy change are part of the soul of this community. And I think we can take seriously this repeated call to keep listening. Sometimes when we hear about these big systemic wrongs, we jump ahead to solutions and conclusions before really hearing and letting the stories and experiences sink in. Sometimes we allow defensiveness to take over and rush to respond. Sometimes we skim over the difficult stories and rush to fixes or solutions. So what might it look like if we take a little more time to really listen? Let the experiences of those who have been harmed really sink in. When we listen deeply, we will be uncomfortable. This isn't easy. For those of us shaped by this powerful white supremacy culture that we are trapped within, we usually feel defensive and we want to seek those solutions and fixes. Recently, I have heard the call quite clearly, especially from Black activists, that we haven't really listened to understand. So I'm trying to be more patient with the discomfort, to sit more patiently with the really challenging stories. Because for me, this has furthered my understanding and furthered my commitment. I continue to struggle with how and what to do, but I'm aware that listening has allowed me to act less from frantic defensive urgency and more from my deep values of justice and love. I hear really good news in this text as it calls us to these right relationships and reconciliation. Even more when it says, even those who don't listen initially or even the first two times, well, it's a bit ironic. At first, it sounds like judgment to treat people as tax collectors, but we know that Jesus welcomed tax collectors and welcomed the Gentiles. His whole mission was an outreach to these types of people. He offered restoration and reconciliation to all. So even if one doesn't listen at first, they are still welcomed and offered opportunities to reconnect. We are offered ongoing opportunities to participate in forgiveness, reconciliation, and repair. That is some of the best news for those of us being called out. Jesus' mission is one of forgiveness and grace. And the other really good news in this text is that Jesus is with us in our midst whenever we seek reconciliation, companioning us as we seek to build right relationships. So may we, especially me, be humble enough to follow these instructions, to listen and listen again more carefully, more closely. May we witness and take action to build right relationships, to address racial injustice and all forms of oppression, and may we seek justice with and for all of creation. Amen.